Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a rousing welcome to our warm-up speaker, Billy.
My name is Billy. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to start out by thank you, Rick, for dinner. It was fun. And thank you, Mike, for asking me. Even though I'd rather you ask somebody else. But, you know, I've known Mike for a long time, 13 years plus, and, you know, I was actually honored to do it for him, you know. I already knew it was going to happen before. I tried to get around it and not let him know that he had to pick his own speaker or his own warm-up speaker, but he figured it out, so, you know, here I am. And, you know, I started out drinking when I was really young. My family drank. Everybody in my family drank. You know, they used to give me beers when I was 2 and 3 years old to watch me run around the house drunk. And it was good entertainment, you know. And, you know, I got older and, you know, I was the last kid from my mom. My mom had 5 children. I was the last one. And I was the baby, so I got away with everything. And my mom had this boyfriend. He worked at Budweiser. And when you're at Budweiser, when you work there, you get to bring home expired beer. And expired beer still gets you drunk, you know. And, you know, I drank quite a bit for a 9-year-old kid, you know. I see my family now that's 9 years old, and I'm thinking, holy crap. You know, I see what I was doing at those ages, and it really scares me, really. Because I, you know, they say they're not doing nothing, but so did I. You know, I said the same stuff. You know, I got involved with doing some bad things. You know, I never got in trouble with the law, but I did some bad things. And, you know, I stuffed out all my feelings with alcohol. You know, I didn't realize I was doing that. I was 16, 17. I thought it was everybody, 16 and 17, drinks. I mean, everybody I knew drank. And, you know, I should have known there was a problem when I started, and I said, I'm only going to do this once in a while, you know. I said that right away, I'm only going to do this once in a while. You know, people don't say that. You know, I had limits on it the first time I ever did it. And that obviously didn't work out. And, you know, I got older. I turned 18, and I moved out of my house like a big boy does, with no job, you know, nothing else. I moved to Visalia with some family. And, I have some family that's in recovery that's got 20 years, so quite a long time. And I remember growing up, I seen how they lived, cops at the house, you know, a lot of insanity. And I seen how they lived when I came over to visit after I moved back to Visalia. I got a job finally over here for a guy in recovery, actually, and I wasn't in recovery yet. And I seen the way they were living, you know, and I thought, man, that's pretty nice. I'd like to have a motorcycle, you know, a nice motorcycle. I'd like to have a car and a family and a, or not a family. I didn't want no kid or nothing. I wanted a house and the car, the material stuff, you know. That's what got me sober, was I wanted to accumulate stuff, you know, and I did. You know, I've had 3 bikes. I've had a few couple trucks. You know, I get to buy my wife a brand new car that nobody's ever owned before. And, you know, my life today is a lot better than I expected, you know. I wanted a material store. That's what I thought. I saw them guys riding the motorcycles, and I know when I was a kid, they were partying. They didn't have all that stuff. They had crap cars that didn't run, and, you know, it was insanity. And I seen them when they were sober, and I thought, man, I got to quit drinking and to get some nice stuff, you know. And, you know, and I had tried to stop drinking before, but, you know, I never had any reason to, you know. It's hard to convince yourself when you're 18 that you have a drinking problem, or 17. And so I watched them and I said, you know what, I'm going to quit drinking. I don't need to go to AA, because I've been around AA since I was a kid, and it's the freaking biggest cult I ever seen when I was a kid, you know. I'd go to the Vano Club, and they'd be drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes. Everybody, man, just, you know, and I'm thinking, well, these people are freaking weird. and it's true. They are weird, you know. You know, and I seen it, and I said, I don't need to go to AA. I'm 18. I don't have a drinking problem. You know, and I like to do some other extracurricular activities too, not just alcohol. And you know, I stayed sober for about 3 days, and I said, you know, this is not very much fun. You know, I'm not feeling in it. So I said, you know what, I'll go to a meeting. You know, and I went to a meeting down at the Lano Club, and you know, that was December probably 11th of 2002, and I've been sober since 2002, and December 7th, 2002, and you know, my life today, you know, I got a beautiful wife, a beautiful daughter, you know, and I got friends and family, you know, it's more than I wanted, that's for damn sure. You know, I wanted to, you know, I really didn't know what I wanted. You know, honestly, I wanted material stuff. That was it. That's all I cared about. You know, and today I would trade all that for the family and the wife and the kid. And you know, it's been a really, really rough week, I would say, for me. You know, when I got sober, you know, you heard it a lot that there would become a time between you and God whether you stay sober or not. You know, and I thought, you know, when I got here, I didn't believe in God. You know, my dad died from cirrhosis when I was 9. I thought, why would God take a kid's dad from him at that age? You know, and that ugly. You know, it's not fun to see. You know, so I looked at all the negative stuff. You know, I never looked at the positive stuff. How did my mom raise 5 children by herself? You know, and hold down a full-time job and cook meals and do all that. I never thought about that. You know, I was definitely looking at the negative stuff. And you know, today my mom had, yesterday or the day before, she had a triple bypass. She had a heart attack last week, and you know, it's and then today they had to go back in again, and there was some bleeding. And you know, I was talking on the phone right before the meeting, and everything went good. And you know, it's funny, because if I was drinking, my brother's at my house right now, and he drinks, and he's drinking. Boy, let me tell you, Jack Daniel bottles are going down quick. You know, and when I left, I told him, bring some for me. You know, I have no desire to drink. You know, it's gone. I have no desire. And you know, and I think if there's a good reason, which there's not, I haven't found one yet. I think, you know, the past 7 years I've had to deal with my daughter getting sick, you know, and that's been a journey, you know, and a lot of things. Now my mom's sick, and you know, I'm still grateful every day for what I do have, you know, and you know, I get to get up every day and go to work, you know, and support a family. And that feeling when you come home from work and your daughter runs up and gives you a hug, it's better than any drink I ever had, you know, and I would trade all that for anything now. You know, that's it. You know, that's my life today, is my family. You know, and I couldn't have said that 13 years ago. That was definitely not what was on my mind. Was, let me take care of my family. You know, I was really selfish. I still am selfish, but I work on it a little more today. You know, I have a great sponsor who keeps me in check. You know, and we were talking at dinner, and I'm like, you know, I'm pretty good. I stuff everything down, and I don't let my emotions out. And he says, bullshit. I can see it right when you walk in the door, something's wrong with you. So, you know, I try. You know, I don't know why I do that, but it's one of those things. You know, I stuff everything down, and I don't deal with stuff like with my mom doing right now, and with my daughter. I feel like I just have to be tough for other people, I guess. I don't know what it is. You know, one of these days I'm just gonna explode, man. You know, and I feel sorry for whoever's around me. But you know, my life's good today. You know, I got it better than I deserve. You know, I got great friends. You know, I get to work with people in recovery. You know, sometimes I want to wring their neck, but I get to work with people in recovery. You know, but it's great. You know, it's good to see newcomers come in the program and stay sober and get it and start growing up. Man, that's, for me, that's the greatest gift recovery-wise that you could do, is when you see somebody come in the rooms and they get it and they stay sober. You see Michael come in for years. You know, and he was, how you doing? How much time you got? I got today. That's all he would say. I got today. And, you know, I got to see him get it and stay. You know, and he's one of my best friends I have, you know, and just through this program, you know. We've done a lot of things together, you know, as in recovery. You know, a lot of things probably we shouldn't have done in recovery. You know, and, but, you know, it's good. I feel so good today that I could be there for another human being, you know. Because I'm really selfish. Like, if you say, let's go over here to the store and get some, I'm like, what am I getting? You know, or let's go do this. It was about me all the time, you know, and it still is. I still think that way, but now I get to stop and say, you know, why I could do this for you and not expect nothing out of it, you know. You know, he calls me up one day and says, I need to go to Oregon to pick up my kids. And I'm like, let's go. You know, I didn't think twice about it, you know. And I like that because I'm able to be there for people. You know, I'm not gloating that I'm the greatest guy ever, because that's definitely not true. But, you know, today my one of my best traits that I have is get to be there for other people, you know, for my friends and family. And, you know, through all this stuff with my mom, I got a whole bunch of siblings that are all spread all over. One's in Maine and a couple in LA and some here. And, you know, it's difficult, you know, but I'm glad that AA gave me the ability to find a higher power, because I did not have one. And, you know, I couldn't tell you how I would be. I would probably be at home with my brother right now if I wasn't in AA and you know, doing damage, you know. I got sober when I was 18, and this summer I'm probably going to give my daughter a kidney. You know, there's got to be some God there, you know. Who would have thought, you know, if I was still drinking, they probably wouldn't accept my kidney, you know. And I told my brother today, you know, if you need a liver, they can take a chunk out, give it to you, you know. Joking around, you know, trying to bring up the morale at my house is kind of low right now. And, you know, I'm grateful to be in recovery. You know, I'm really glad that I am in recovery, because I get to come here for free, and I don't have to go pay a therapist no money. You know, it's free. You know, I could call Rick anytime and talk to him. You don't expect nothing from me, you know. And it's a really good deal. You know, if you're new to this program, you know, give yourself a chance. You know, stay for a year and work the steps and go to meetings. And help other people. And I say it in my home group meeting. If I've not met the guy yet that's wanted to stay sober, that's worked the steps, that goes to meetings, that help other people, and has drank, I haven't met him. Everybody I know that comes back to say, oh, I stopped going to meetings, or I cut my sponsees loose, something, you know. I haven't met the guy that say, yeah, I was doing all the steps, and I was going to meetings and helping people, and I just drank. You know, I haven't met him. You know, I've been here a little while. You know, and it's a great, great deal. You know, it saved my life. My wife's in recovery. You know, I have a lot of family in recovery. And it's definitely worth it. You know, if you think you belong here, stay a year and do all those things and see how your life is. Thank you.
Okay, let's give a rousing welcome to our featured speaker, Michael. That is going, correct? That is going, right?
I think so.
My name is Michael, and I'm an alcoholic. First of all, I want to let you know I got a knot in my stomach, a lump in my throat, and my eyes twitching. And, man, I'm sober. Yeah. Thank you, Rick, for the honor of asking me to come up here this evening and for dinner. And, Billy, where'd you go? There he is. Billy, you said you might not be the greatest man, but you're one of the greatest men that I know that I get to call a friend, and I wanted to let you know that, because you have been there with me through a lot of stuff, and, you know, we have grown pretty close over the last few years. I'm going to make you cry. So, I guess it all started, I was born at a pretty young age. Past that, I got to pull out my little cheat sheet here. Had a couple people tell me they were going to rip it up and throw it away, as long as I'm honest. But I first got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous at about the age 7, and that's when I received my first chip. Wasn't due to anything that I did. My mother was in the program, and at the time I was in the custody of Child Protective Service. And at our first visitation, she gave me her 30-day chip. That's kind of my first memory of Alcoholics Anonymous. And unfortunately, she wasn't one who was ever able to maintain her sobriety. And so I guess I had kind of a warped perception of Alcoholics Anonymous when I first got here, thinking that, you know, that it didn't work. And for a long time, as I grew up in the system, there were several opportunities for me to get drunk and to drink with kids in my neighborhood, you know, because I always seemed to find the wrong people to run around and hang around with, and I just felt like it fit. Can't really explain it. Seemed to get in trouble a lot. There were times when other people would offer me alcohol or other things, and I would specifically say no because I knew what happened to my mother, my brother, and my sister, who were all not sober. And that went on for until I was about 18 years old. And I don't know what changed, but somewhere along the line, I found myself up in Three Rivers at a party, and everybody was drinking, and I got my first beer. And I remember carefully analyzing everybody around me and you know, wondering how all this worked and what you were supposed to do, because I sure didn't want to do it wrong, you know, especially it was my first time, and I didn't want people to know it was my first time. So I saw that everybody had a beer in their hand. So I went over to where the beer was, and I put a beer in my hand. And I saw that everybody was, you know, they were drinking them. So then I got to thinking, you know, well, how fast should they drink them, you know? I mean, is that the same beer that he was holding 10 minutes ago, or is that a different one? Okay. So then I started getting self-conscious, thinking that I was holding the beer too long, and I hadn't even opened it yet. So I cracked it open, and because I didn't want to hold on that beer too long, I started drinking it just about as fast as I could. Not because it tasted good, because it didn't. And not because I knew what getting drunk felt like, because I didn't. I just wanted to get that beer out of my hand before everybody realized it had been in my hand for 5 minutes. And then once I finished drinking it, I wanted everybody to know that I finished it. So I held it up in the air, and I don't know where this came from, and I went, yeah! And I threw it on the ground, and I crushed it, right? I had accomplished my first beer. But there I was with a new problem in front of me. I didn't have a beer in my hand, and everybody else did, and they're going to notice it. So then I went over and I grabbed the next beer, and that's how my drinking started, okay? And somewhere along the line that night, I wound up waking up the next morning alongside of a river in a puddle of my own puke and wasn't quite sure where I was and assumed that they had all left me. Well, it turns out the place that I was at was kind of along the riverside, and I was just in their backyard. But it took me about 30 minutes to wind up inside and figure out that, you know, I had just passed out and I was still okay. But it opened up a whole new world for me. You know, I heard stories about me the next day that I was doing this and I was doing that, and I wasn't ashamed of any of it, you know. Couldn't remember half of it, and I was proud of most of it. And, you know, at that point, I felt like I had a competitive edge on this whole drinking thing because I had seen it all growing up. You know, I had seen the violence, and I had seen, you know, I had seen the, you know, abandonment, me not being around, and, you know, I kind of felt like I knew what it was about, but at the same time, I felt like I had a lot of catching up to do. So I that's how I drank, you know, and I never drank for the taste. And I never drank because I thought you wanted me to drink. I at that point, I drank because it made me feel real good, and it helped me to just forget about a lot of stuff that I had shoved down and not wanted to deal with. You know, it was all right, you know, through high school until, you know, I graduated and, like Billy said, moved out like a big boy into a friend's garage. And, you know, and I stayed there and continued my drinking and other illegal activities until I was asked to leave with a .45 pointed down my nose. And, so I did, and at that point, you know, I couch surfed for a while, and you know, I some of the things I did, I don't know how I'm here today and why I'm alive. You know, I accumulated a lot of debt. I hurt a lot of people, and I was completely oblivious to my actions causing any harm to anybody else, you know. Throughout that process, I wound up getting the opportunity to see the inside of, you know, prison, county jail, NCF, DRC, Pine a couple times, PAR, Shekinah House. You know, I figured I was just touring all of Tulare County's fine facilities, right? I was going for my master's degree in the University of Hard Knocks. And it never panned out very well. You know, throughout that process, I had a couple of kids, you know, and somewhere along the line, I mean, I was doing the same things that was done to me, dropping my kids off and abandoning them, you know, getting my own little apartment for a little while, and you know, then all of a sudden, not paying the electric bill, not paying the gas bill, not paying rent, you know what I mean, and moving out and taking everything, including the mirrors and whatever wasn't bolted down, and if I could take it, I took it too, you know what I mean, and started accumulating a lot of debt and a lot of fines and just stuff like that. The timeline kind of blurs together a little bit, even though I've been sober for a little while. I still look back and I can't quite put it all in like a chronological order. But somewhere in there, I ended up in the military. And, you know, I don't know if I saw this in a movie, if it really happened, but I'm pretty sure it really happened. I got in trouble for check fraud. And, you know, my cousin at the time knew the police in that town pretty well. And at the time, I'd entertained the idea of going into the military. And when I got caught, I sat there in front of the, you know, the law, and they said, "We've heard you've been thinking about going into the military, and we also heard that you've been committing check fraud. So there's two roads that you can take right now." And I ended up going in the military. So, you know, I went off to kind of do the right thing and learned a lot about myself there, and one of them was that I really, really did like to drink a lot. And, you know, it wasn't long before I wound up in my first high-speed chase there. And of all times, we were in a white Ford Bronco. It got a lot of attention, and not good attention. I ended up not taking my military career very serious and not completing my entire enlisted time. You know, I got wrapped up in a lot of bad things and went AWOL, came back to California, and you know, had another kid while I was over there. And you know, I somewhere in the midst of all of this, I remember driving around, and I would just be in tears. I remember the moment that I realized I was powerless, okay? And let me tell you something. I didn't realize that there was any hope, and I didn't realize that I could make it out. I just, I had reached a spot in my life where I felt like I didn't have any options anymore, and I was laying in bed in jail, and this was my second time looking at, you know, my fifth felony, and I remember thinking two things. One, that I told myself I would never go back to jail no matter what. And two, I remember thinking, I don't think that's ever possible. There's a verse in another good book that I read that says, you can take a pig and wash it up and clean it up, but that pig will always return to the mud because it's a pig. And I felt like I was that way. I felt like no matter how hard I wanted to stay sober, or no matter how hard I wanted to do right, I was destined and bound. It was in my DNA to end up where I was at, you know? And I didn't know what to do. Now, when I was 7 years old and I got taken from my mom and never got put back into her custody, she gave me two things. She gave me a gold cross and she gave me a little card that you could put in your wallet with the footprints prayer on it, okay? And for some uncanny reason, I don't know, God, he's an uncanny reason, it gave me faith as I grew up to know that he was there. I couldn't explain it. I didn't know why. I guess I had faith like a child, right? And, you know, as I got older, I kind of pushed him away and I blamed him for stuff, you know? And I remember putting, you know, two select fingers up in the air and saying a few choice words and deciding to kind of take the reins by myself. So I thought, right? And, after I got out of jail that last time and I didn't sober up, you know, I kind of bounced in and out of meetings and, you know, I found out real quick that I was very lonely and I had a lot of issues with abandonment and I had a lot of issues with myself and fitting in and I had to always be around people and even at the expense of me making myself look like a fool, I had to make people laugh because it drew attention to me, right? And if I couldn't drink, I had to have attention. And, you know, those weird people that Billy was talking about, they meet in these rooms and they do chants and they're part of a cult. Well, they were happy people and they would listen to me sometimes and they'd laugh at some of my stupid jokes, right? And so I would find myself going to meetings, okay? And I'd go to meetings almost every night and people would ask me, so how much time you got now? And I learned real quick, right? If I say I got today, then I don't have to tell them that I used last night, right? Or that I got all, you know? And I was like, they're stupid. So I just, there comes that knot again, and that twitch in the eye. I found my bottom when, I would go to meetings, and, after the meeting was over and everybody else would go home, I was alone again. But fortunately, the bars stayed open until 2. So I'd go back out to the bars every night, you know. And at that point, it wasn't really, I just needed to be around people and I needed to feel like I was welcomed and, you know, and it just was this cycle that kept going on and on until things continued to spiral in even a worse way, you know. I mean, the final straw for me was, you know, I had some run-ins with some drug dealers, and we didn't quite see eye to eye on some transactions, and you know, it turned into kind of a little shootout without me shooting back, and you know, my kids were involved in that, and I put my children and my family at the time in that position, and the most perfect idea, the best idea that I could possibly come up with at that moment wasn't to stop and get sober and to change my ways. It was to ship my kids off to Oregon so that they'd be safer. So I shipped them off to Oregon to go live with their grandparents so that they wouldn't have to be in trouble or in danger. Right? That was the best idea that I could come up with at the time. And I continued doing what I was doing for another couple of months before one day I got a phone call from my daughter and we were talking on the phone and she said, Dad, how come I can't come home? And what I didn't tell you was for weeks before that, I would drive around the middle of the night after the bar closed, after the Alana Club closed, and I chose not to pick up that 500-pound phone and call anybody. All those numbers that I've been given by lots of people in these rooms, I would just cry. I would drive around and cry and just pray to God that this would all stop. You know, I was, I didn't know what to do, you know? And little did I know at that time, God was about to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. And He did it in the form of my daughter. And she's, I knew in my heart I couldn't tell her the truth because I didn't want to tell her that I was out there, you know, running amok. And so at that time, I started going back to meetings and I shut up and I suited up. And I just kept coming back, you know. And I remember I sat at the Alano Club and a couple people walked by me and they introduced themselves to me. And we had known each other for years. And then they stopped and turned around and they said, "Mike, is that you?" And I said, "Yeah." And, you know, that was the first day. That was August 30th, 2005. And the only thing I've done perfect since then is not use and drink, okay? Everything else, I probably screwed up some way, some shape, or some form. You know, I had a resentment against getting a sponsor and working the steps because I didn't think that I really needed to. So for the first year of my sobriety, I intentionally chose not to work the steps or get a sponsor because I wanted to prove to all you guys that it didn't have to happen. So I got my first miserable year, okay, and you know, I was going to meetings, staying sober, and still going to the bars at night because I was still lonely and still trying to fill this void and still lost and didn't know what to do and, you know, had a lot of anger. You know, I can tell you a handful of times where, you know, poor Billy was with me in my car and, you know, I slammed on the brakes and locked him up to a guy who was maybe tailgating me and tried to jump out and not shake his hand. And, you know, I had all these issues that I didn't realize. And, you know, I'm thankful because the people in the program loved on me no matter what, you know, and they kept telling me, just keep coming back, you know. And I eventually got a sponsor and I eventually started doing the steps. And I got through that tremendous fourth step, you know, and I think I had written about 60 pages. And when I sat down to read it to somebody, they were like, "What the hell? Did you write a book?" And, you know, I started doing all these things, and I'll be real honest with you. I wasn't fully bought in on how it would work or it would work or, you know, it was just what everybody was doing here. And they were staying sober and they seemed happier and, you know, their lives started to get put together and it was the next indicator thing, okay? I can't tell you, I got it, you know what I mean? And I just started doing it and honestly, I think I'd started working the steps and I didn't really fully understand the fourth step, the fifth step, and the sixth step. Until I got through the 10th step and realized, wait a minute, that's the same thing as all that other stuff. And that's my golden tool, you know? And it was Reyes that told me you can work a 10th step every day. You know what I mean? It's just a quick inventory. And you can save yourself a lot of heartache, you know? And, you know, I started working with other people. I heard a long time ago in the program, the chances of you going back out are pretty slim if you get into service, you know. So I started secretary meetings and, you know, I started, you know, being a treasurer or just getting involved and, you know, giving people rides or just getting involved with more and more people in the program. And for the first couple of years, I went to multiple meetings every single day without a beat. Okay, I didn't have custody of my children. I was focusing just on staying sober, and honestly, a lot of it was just the social aspect because I had to be around people. You know, I didn't keep coming around meetings because I felt like it was working. I was staying sober. Okay, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself through the people in Alcoholics Anonymous in this program, and I kept getting saturated with how the program worked and what to do. And, you know, today I have a beautiful wife who is patient with me and understands the disease that I have. And, I have full custody of my older two children. You know, we have, for the last 5 years, And let me tell you the impact that this program has had on my family, okay? I shared this tonight at dinner. When we first got custody of my older two children, I have four, my wife and I have two together, who've never seen me drunk at all, okay? Now they've seen me lose my temper, they've seen me throw some cell phones, they've seen me yell and stomp my feet and do some other stupid things, you know what I mean? But today, I've got a program, and today I can pull them aside after I do all that silly crap and say, you know what, I was wrong, and I shouldn't have acted that way, you know, and I'm going to do my best to work on what I need to work on so I don't do that again, you know, and we do that today, and the gift, one of the gifts that this program's given me is when we first got custody of my children, our children, my daughter said, when I grow up, I want to stay home and collect a check. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. She's not talking about the lottery. And that was just the honesty of a child. That's what she saw. That's the example that she was given, you know, and I was a huge part of that, okay? Today, if you ask my daughter what she wants to be, she'll tell you she wants to be a nurse and she wants to work in the OBGYN. Well, guess what else? My wife's like a class away from starting the nursing program, you know? That's the program right there. That has nothing to do with me except for I started doing the things that were suggested. Okay, and I didn't do it by choice a lot of times. I just started doing it because it was the next indicated thing and I wanted the hurting to stop, you know? Today, I can't believe some of the gifts that we've got in our life, you know what I mean? I was reading the promises, you know, one of the promises is that, the 12 promises is that we won't fear financial insecurity, you know, and by no stretch of the imagination are we, independently wealthy, but, you know, we're one of those families that goes, month to month and checking everything out, making sure that we can pay the bills and this and that, and there's been times where the finances didn't quite meet the expenses, you know what I mean? And I've been told a lot of times in recovery, romance and finance will take people out. You know what I'm saying? And you know who. And early on in our relationship, you know, we identified that. And, you know, sure, we stress on stuff, but In all the time that I've been sober, anytime I found myself in a situation like that, something's happened. Someone's come along and you know, given us furniture, given us money, given us all kinds of stuff. I mean, we have been taken care of, and that was God doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. You know what I mean? In recovery, I've been fired from jobs. You know, in recovery, I've lost family members. I got a call a couple days ago from my sister, who's still out there with my mother and my brother. And, you know, I love nothing more than to have a relationship with them today and to be a part of their lives. But I can't because they don't choose to live sober, and they choose to continue to live in that chaos. You know, I was listening to a speaker this morning on the way into work, and he was reading the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, and the part where it talks about, you know, those who don't get it are maybe mentally incapable or doing it or can't be honest with themselves. And to this day, right now, I don't get it. Like, I don't understand why I can be sober and they can't, you know? I know that in this other good book that I read, it says faith without action is nothing, you know? And I know that I had to get into action when I got sober, and I had to eventually start doing things and I had to become willing. And you know, it's hard to sit on the sideline and watch other people go through stuff that I really love, and know that when it comes right down to it, I can pray for them and God can be there for them, but it takes their action to get them sober, you know. And the neat thing about this is, here's another gift of the program, okay, and I hope this is where I get my hope from, is that kind of stuff used to paralyze me, okay? I remember my mother, if you've ever been to Visalia on the corner of Schleri and Santa Fe, where there's a population of homeless people, that's where my mom used to reside, you know, and she chose to live out there on the streets. And I remember one time picking her up, and you know, there's some apartments around the corner over there, and you pull up and you park under the carport. And under the carport, there's a little closet where you can kind of keep stuff stored if you want to, if it doesn't fit in your apartment. And that's where my mom lived, in one of those little closets, you know. And I don't have to live her recovery, and I don't have to live her chaos, you know, and I don't have to let it paralyze me like it used to. Today, I've got the gift of knowing that I'm available to her if she wants to be sober. I'm available to my sister and my brother, but I don't got to anchor to my ass like I've been taught. You know, I don't have to stay stuck in their stuff with them. You know what I mean? And I don't have to feel guilty about that either. You know, sometimes it chokes me up because, I mean, I think that's natural. I wish they could be sober. You know what I mean? But it's just out of my grasp. And you know, today my responsibility lies I get to go to work, you know. I get to be a father for my children and a husband to my wife, you know. And I get to acknowledge when I'm wrong and say I'm sorry, which doesn't happen often. It's hard being right a lot, you know. But she's going to call BS right now. Or it's going to be a long ride home to Reedley for me. You know, I got a lot of great friends in this program. And, you know, like I said earlier, I couldn't have done it without everybody in this room. You know, whether I know you or not, I do some traveling for work. And, you know, it puts me out of town for sometimes a week at a time, sometimes a month, where I'm home on the weekends. And, the beautiful thing that I found is AA and Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in these rooms are everywhere, you know. And these wonderful little computers that we all carry in our pocket are the map to every one of them, okay. I've showed up at 6 o'clock at night in the middle of LA, and I couldn't tell you what city or where, because I just followed the pink line on the GPS to get where I needed to be, and typed in AA and typed in meeting near me, you know, and bam! Had like 3 or 4 different options, and I showed up. And as soon as I showed up, someone shook my hand and introduced themselves to me and gave me a hug like they had known me for a long time. You know, and that's the hand of AA reaching out to me, not knowing who I was, where I came from, or what my motives were, okay? Because my motives weren't always right, and I can share this with my wife in here because she knows all about me, but it wasn't the meetings that draw me to the meetings when I first started coming, you know, and yeah, newcomers. But you know, that's just part of my story. Billy's shaking his finger at me back there. It was Billy, that's why I kept coming. No. But you know, the program's been there for me. And you know, sometimes my life starts to get a little squirrely, and everybody around me starts to turn into jerks, you know, and they're all messing up, and that's my little indicator going off, like Rick would say, well, when was the last time you were at a meeting? Well, did you call Ed and tell him? You know, have you talked to Reyes? Have you talked to Billy? You know, all these people who are in my support group. And the answer is probably no, you know, it redirects me. And I truly believe that no matter how long we're here, that we still need each other, you know, and we still need to be in service. You know, in my professional life and in my recovery, I make myself available. I trust God today. There was a long time that in my professional career that I'm in now, I wouldn't talk about being sober. I wouldn't talk about some of the things that I've done or where I've been because I felt like I'd be judged or, you know what I mean? It might remove an opportunity that I might have. But somewhere along the line, I realized if I'm doing God's work, God's going to take care of me. Okay? And I would tell people when they start telling me, you know, about people that are in their life that aren't sober or that they're struggling with, you know, I would tell them about my past and give them my phone number and say, you know, give me a call anytime, day or night, because that's what people did for me. You know, and I remember going through things and being able to pick up the phone and call at any time, day or night, and talk to people, you know. And you know, so I got to still continue to make myself available. I got to still continue to go to meetings. I got to still continue to work the steps, you know. It doesn't get to stop. You know, the strength that I have from the program is God. You know, God brought me to a point where He opened up my mind and allowed me to meet the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the members of Alcoholics Anonymous showed me the book and taught me how to work the steps. And those are things that can't ever change or can't ever be part of my recovery that leave. Because once they do, the wheels on this bus start wobbling, and who knows where it'll end up. You know what I mean? I've seen people come in and stay sober for a long time, and I've seen people who had a long time leave. And like Billy said, you know, usually it's because they stop going to meetings and, you know, they stop calling people, you know, and I can't do that. I can't afford to do that. You know, I proved to myself beyond a shadow of a doubt that I'm not that guy who can drink and you take your hat off to me. You know, I'm the guy that if we all go out to dinner and someone has a drink and we're leaving and there's a little bit in the left, I don't get it. You know what I mean? I want to go back. I've done that before. That's a secret. One time I was out with some people when I was drinking, and one person left about that much of their beer on the table, and after they all kind of got up and left, I looked around and I grabbed that beer and I drank it because I didn't know that they could just leave it in the bottle. You know, that's kind of the alcoholic I am. And, you know, I don't have to live like that anymore today. And if I keep doing what I'm doing, you know, my hope is that I'll die sober, you know, and I don't see any reason why I wouldn't. And, you know, my hope is today that I'll continue to have opportunities to be able to, you know, carry the message to other people. And I think that's about it for me tonight. Thank you for letting me share.